Well, here's a question worth sitting with before the episode begins today. What if the greatest obstacle to your ministry is not your lack of gifting, but instead it's really too much of you? Well, the disciples had already witnessed miracles. They had preached the gospel, cast out demons. They had seen the dead raised, the sick healed. And on the road to Capernaum, with all of that behind them, they argued about one thing. Who among them was the greatest? It would be easy to read that story and feel the distance between ourselves and them, but honestly, the church today has not abandoned that conversation. We've simply learned to disguise it. We compare influence metrics, platform sizes, conference invitations, book deals, attendance numbers, titles. The argument is the same. The vocabulary has just simply been updated. And into the middle of that conversation, their vision and ours, Jesus speaks four words that should reshape the identity of every leader who carries his gifts. Those four words are simple. Not so with you. And today we're exploring what those four words actually mean for the apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, pastoral, and teaching gifts in the local church and in the marketplace. Because the kingdom does not elevate servants into leaders. It transforms leaders into servants. And that transformation is not optional equipment for the fivefold gifts. It's the foundation on which every gift either becomes genuinely fruitful or quietly drifts into something that serves the person carrying it more than the people it was given for. And it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast.
Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Charles Russell, here alongside Bruce Ritter, and this is Season 3, Episode 29, Reduced to Greatness, the Servant Identity of the Five Gifts. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Charles. It feels like it's been a minute since we've been here, but I know we had two episodes that we haven't skipped a week, but we haven't been together in a couple weeks, and so I'm excited to pick up where we left off, talking about what it means to lead and what it means to be a leader.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's great to be reunited here again on the podcast, Five Gifts Podcast. It's been a busy couple of weeks. I've been signing book deals and I've been on large stage and platforms all over the world and just really elevated myself in the ministry. So glad.
That's a
glad
great leader, Charles. Why don't you tell us about your opportunity this past weekend?
Yeah, wow, what an honor and privilege it was. I'd be with a great church in Garland, Texas, intercultural church that was part of our pastors' conference back in May that we did in Mesquite, Texas. And just humbled to serve them, and they made me feel so welcome and so at home. And I had a great Saturday night, a youth emphasis on their in that service, and great time of prayer around the altar. And yesterday, and just again another great time of worship, great time of just praying for the leaders and the workers, the ministers in the church. And it's always inspiring to me to see the work of God outside of your local context. And that was just another shining example of what God's doing in this earth as he's raising up this church in that corner of the world who is a witness and a shining example of the goodness of God to that community. And so just humbled to be a part of that and to be able to serve them. So it's a great weekend. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Pastor Salatiel and his team, his family, they're just wonderful people. I'm going to get to go there, later this month, me and my wife, and just excited to reconnect with them and to step into what I think God is really blessing there in Garland, Texas. And so our big shout outs to Pastor Salatiel and his team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, as we kind of get into the content of the episode today, talking again about being reduced to greatness, this servant identity of the five gifts. And, you know, when we talk about the five gifts, most of the conversation about fivefold ministry focuses on three things: discovering your gift, understanding your office, and learning to operate in your anointing. And all that is genuinely important. But scripture places something beneath the gifting that the gifting conversation often skips over. And when it's skipped over, the gifts drift in predictable and damaging directions. And that something is very specific. It's identity. Specifically, servant identity. The five gifts of Ephesians 4, they're not celebrity offices. They're not positions of spiritual privilege to which, you know, certain leaders are elevated. What they are servant gifts. They're given by a servant king. They're modeled in a servant ministry, and they're designed to function through people who have genuinely embraced the servant posture of the one who gave them. And so as we think about service and servanthood, man, Jesus is the greatest example of that. And so Jesus never gave apostles to the church so that they could build personal empires. He gave apostles to equip the saints. He never gave prophets to create spiritual personalities or around whom people would orbit. But he did give prophets to restore covenant faithfulness in communities that have drifted from it. Every gift in its genuine form, it exists for someone else's maturity, not for the recognition, not for influence, not even for expansion of the person carrying it. So today in this episode, we're going to cover the universal human drift toward self-promotion, Jesus' specific redefinition of greatness in the kingdom, three forms of leadership power, and which one actually produces lasting transformation. What servant identity looks like in each of the five gifts specifically, the freedom that genuine humility releases in a leader's life, and then finally the model that holds all of this together.
Well said, Charles. I can't help but think that we're going to talk a lot today about how servant leadership really does exist for others. And, you know, before we can talk about the servant identity of the five gifts, I think we have to be honest about what every gift carrier is fighting against, because the drift towards self-promotion, it's not a modern day problem or even a ministry specific problem. It is a persistent feature of human nature, and it can show up just in almost any area and any context. So let's talk about the me first problem. The first couple, think about this. Adam and Eve chose their wisdom over God's. They leaned in, obviously tempted by the serpent, but they chose their own path. Jonah ran from God's assignment because he didn't like the people who would benefit from it. And we have already referenced today James and John, two of the closest disciples to Jesus, two men who would later become foundational figures in the early church. And they leveraged their mother to approach Jesus and request the highest seats of honor in the coming kingdom. And that led to a big dispute among the disciples, who argued about greatness on the road to Capernaum while Jesus is walking toward Jerusalem and the cross. I think the Gospel of Mark frames that in such a stark, powerful way. But the pattern is consistent across Scripture, because the full sweep of church history, because it is not primarily a spiritual failure, it's a human failure. It's the instinct to orient every situation toward our own benefit, our own recognition, our own position. And ministry contexts don't eliminate that instinct. In fact, they give it maybe some new, more sophisticated forms, at least spiritually. The modern ministry myths that reflect this are specific and recognizable. The belief that leaders deserve privilege, we have to be really careful with overextending into honor culture, that somehow the calling itself entitles a person to certain treatment, certain differences, certain exemptions from ordinary accountability. The belief that leadership exists to benefit the leader, that the organization, the congregation, the platform, they all exist to serve the vision carrier rather than the people the vision is for. And so the belief that people who question or disagree are displaying disloyalty rather than exercising the kind of honest engagement that healthy leadership requires, and the belief that control and effectiveness are the same thing. And so every fivefold gift has its specific version of this kind of drift. For example, an apostolic leader can be anointed to build systems and build the body of Christ, but the drift is where they begin to build personal kingdoms and personal allegiances rather than kingdom foundations. Prophetic leaders can leverage spiritual insight for superiority rather than serving covenant restoration. Boy, that was true of the Corinthian church. The evangelistic leader can become driven by numbers, by metrics that validate their ministry, rather than by genuine love for the people those numbers represent. Pastoral leaders. Listen, pastors can cultivate loyalty to themselves rather than shepherding people toward the chief shepherd and caring for them. Teachers can pursue intellectual admiration. Believe me, as someone who tends to function in the teacher gift, it's easy to fall into the satisfaction of feeling like the most important person in the room whose understanding is impressive. Rather than cultivating a genuine understanding in others that helps them in their spiritual formation. Now, the issue in every case is not the gift. The gift is not the problem. The gifts are from Christ, and the gifts are good. The issue is the identity of the person carrying the gift, whether they have genuinely embraced the servant posture that the gift requires, or whether the gift is being used in service of self that has not yet been reduced.
Wow, you know, that's so important what you're talking about, Bruce, because, you know, Jesus, he doesn't leave the me first problem at the level of diagnosis. In fact, he directly addresses this issue specifically and with a clarity that removes any ambiguity about what genuine kingdom leadership is supposed to look like. In Matthew chapter 20, gives us kind of the context of all this. So James and John's mother, she's made her request, the seats of honor on Jesus' right and left in the coming kingdom. Now, the other 10 disciples are indignant, which tells us something very important. They wanted the same thing. the indignation was not moral superiority. It was competitive resentment. Jesus gathers all of them and makes a distinction that really redefines everything. He says, you know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. So there's really two leadership systems being contrasted here. There's the world system, which organizes around position, around authority, control, recognition. In the world system, power is understood as power over the capacity to determine outcomes, to direct others, to occupy the highest place. And look, this system's not presented as evil in itself. Jesus acknowledges that it exists. He simply says, not so with you. Because the kingdom system organizes around service, around sacrifice, humility, and influence. So in the kingdom system, power is understood as power for the capacity to release others into their potential, to build up rather than to dominate, to give rather than to accumulate. And the measure of greatness in the kingdom system is not how many people are serving you, but how genuinely you are serving them. So look, crucially, Jesus is not removing leadership from the disciples. He's not telling them that authority, direction, influence have no place in the kingdom. What he's doing is redefining what genuine leadership is. The great leader in the kingdom system becomes great through becoming a genuine servant. The one who would be first must embrace the posture of the last. And this is not a demotion of leadership. This is an elevation of service to the highest expression of it.
And so understanding that Jesus has redefined greatness, Charles, as service, I think that raises a practical question. What kinds of power are available to leaders, and which of them actually produces the transformation that the five gifts exist to catalyze? So let's talk about three types of leadership power. Well, the first is positional power. That's the authority that comes from a title, an office, a role in an organizational structure. Jesus says the Gentiles love that. The world loves that. Now, this is the form of power. It does not without value. I mean, structures exist for reasons. The authority embedded in them creates conditions for ordered, sustainable community, sustainable systems. But positional power has a specific and consistent limitation. It can generate compliance. It can't generate genuine transformation. People can defer to a title without being genuinely shaped by the person carrying it. And they may follow the direction without being formed into the people that leadership, that direction is supposed to be developing. So in five gift ministry terms, people will respect an apostolic title. Although we discourage that, certainly it carries a sense of prestige, and people will acknowledge that. They acknowledge the prophetic gift in a person's life, and they attend a teaching leader's sessions. Titles, they can fill seats, they look great on posters, and they produce organizational cooperation, but they've never on their own, now hear me, they've never on their own reproduced disciples. The person who leads primarily from position will find that their influence extends exactly as far as their positional authority and no further. The second kind of power is what we might call possessional power. That's the influence that comes from what a leader has. A leader has knowledge. They have financial resources. They have organizational capacity. They have the requisite credentials. They have relational networks. They have big platforms. And these things genuinely expand what a leader can do and a scale at which they can operate, but they share the same fundamental limitation as positional power. They can resource ministry, but inherently, it doesn't necessarily transform people. A leader can possess everything that makes ministry look impressive and still be producing little genuine transformation or formation in the people around them.
And so there's a third form, and it's the one that every fivefold gift should be developing toward. It's personal power, the influence that grows from who a leader genuinely is. So character, integrity, consistency between what's professed and how life is actually lived. Humility, that's not a performance, but really a settled orientation. Love that persists when it's not returned, when it's not recognized, even when it costs more than it earns. People don't ultimately follow titles. They don't follow resources. That what they do is follow people they genuinely trust. And trust is built not by what a leader claims about themselves or even by what they accomplish. It's built by the accumulated experience of being in relationship with someone whose character is consistent, whose word is reliable, whose care is genuine, and whose posture toward others is servant rather than self-serving. Every fivefold gift, as it matures, should really be moving from positional dependence toward personal influence. The apostolic leader who is growing is one whose people are following their vision, not because the organizational chart requires it, but because the apostles' character and genuine love for the community have earned the trust that makes voluntary, wholehearted followership possible. The prophetic leader who's growing is one whose words carry weight, not primarily because of their spiritual authority, but because their life has demonstrated the humility and love that make their confrontation safe to receive. So every gift matures through this same movement, from the power that comes from position and possession toward the power that comes from genuine personal formation. Now, with that whole framework established, let's press into what servant identity looks like in each of the five gifts specifically, because the servant posture has different shapes depending on the gift, and the drift away from it takes different forms. The apostolic gift and its servant expression is a foundation building gift rather than an empire building one. The world sees the apostle as a pioneer, a visionary leader whose primary contribution is the bold initiation of new things. And look, that capacity, that's real, but the servant apostle's primary question is not, how can I expand my platform? It's, how can I equip others? So the genuine apostle is really most satisfied not when they're at the center of a movement, but when the people they've developed are building things that the apostle could not have built alone. Servant apostles release people rather than collecting followers. They build foundations that others can build on rather than constructing monuments to their own vision. Let's talk about the prophetic gift in its servant expression. It's a covenant restoration gift rather than a spiritual superiority gift. The prophet is not the spiritual police, the designated voice of correction who stands over the community with a record of failures to be exposed. The servant prophet carries tears before thunder. They enter the pain of a community before they speak into its deviation. So Jesus, he washed his disciples' feet, including the feet of Judas, before the confrontation of the upper room. The servant prophet understands that truth delivered without genuine love for the person receiving it is not yet fully the gift. It's knowledge without the servant heart that makes it genuinely useful.
You know, continuing on, the evangelistic gift, I think, Charles, in its servant expression, is a love for people gift rather than a numbers accumulation gift. The metric that drives a servant evangelist is not the count of decisions. It's the genuine joy of heaven over one person who was lost and has been found, the spiritual transformative outcome. Every conversation to the evangelist with a real servant's heart, every conversation matters to them not because of what it contributes to ministry statistics, but because of what it contributes to the eternal story of the person in the conversation. The servant evangelist celebrates the joy of the kingdom more than the validation of the ministry. And so, listen, that transforms people from being targets to be converted. They're instead human beings, people created in the image of God to be genuinely loved and redeemed. And love is willing to invest without knowing whether the investment will produce even a visible return. I would say with the pastoral gift in its servant expression, really is a stewardship gift rather than an ownership gift. Pastors don't own sheep. They steward sheep that belong to the chief shepherd. That's not a tired trope either. That is such vital connection to the heart of Jesus. It's the pastor's is serving at the level of soul care. And I think that distinction matters more than it might initially appear, because the pastoral drift toward ownership can produce, well, a specific kind of congregational culture where people's loyalty is ultimately to the pastor rather than to Christ, where departure from the congregation is experienced as personal betrayal rather than the natural movement of people developing in their own callings, and where the people's needs, or rather the pastor's need to be needed, becomes a subtle but real obstacle to genuine congregational maturity. The servant shepherd points people to Christ rather than toward themselves and finds joy when the people in their care grow beyond their need for the pastor's guidance. You know, I'm reminded, Charles, how I've had to grow as a pastor over the years. And, you know, when people initially left our church for different reasons, some good reasons, some noble reasons, some, you know, bad reasons, at least in my estimation, the cause for their departure was different, but always took every departure personally. And so I think one thing that I can see in my life as I've matured is I was able to celebrate, especially when those reasons were represented by their own growth. And a dear friend of mine who and his wife served in leadership in our church, board members, they were both worship leaders in our church, fantastic people. And when a calling came to a different town where he could serve in education, you know, what I noticed in me was really encouraging to me, Charles. I noticed a change in my feel about that. I could celebrate that rather than feel as though I was losing something. Now, I did lose something. I lost tremendous leadership. I lost a wonderful friend that I could often go have lunch with. And there's something about when you take on the servant posture, that's something that will mature in you. I'm sorry, that clip hit close to home, and I just wanted to share about that. Well, let's talk about the teaching gift, and then we're pressing on here. The teaching gift and its servant expression really is about a transformation cultivation gift rather than an admiration collection gift. The servant gift is not primarily satisfied by the quality of their own explanations or even by the elegance of their theological formulation or comprehensiveness of their biblical framework. They're satisfied by evidence that people that they are teaching are genuinely being changed by what they're learning. Listen, the heart of the servant leader when it comes to teaching is the transformation of the people they're teaching. That's really the goal. And the servant teacher delights. They find joy when a student eventually surpasses them, when the understanding they've cultivated in another person grows beyond what they themselves have achieved. So again, knowledge and service of the servant teacher becomes an act of worship, and truth becomes genuinely transformative rather than simply impressive. So the servant identity of each gift raises an obvious and practical question. What does it actually take to live this way? Because the drift toward self-promotion is not overcome by simply deciding to be more humble. It really does require something deeper. We might call it a genuine freedom that only comes from a specific kind of interior life development. So, Charles, you titled this episode "Reduced to Greatness." Well, let's talk about the freedom of genuine humility. One of my pastors, Dr. Ron McManus, I'll never forget him saying this. He said this. I heard him say this from the pulpit. I heard this as he's training other pastors. He said, "The most secure person in ministry is the servant. They're always the most secure person in the room. They know their role, and they know exactly what they're called to do." And I think that's the invitation. Jesus issues two invitations in the kingdom definition of leadership that reframe everything else. The first is to renounce entitlement, not as a spiritual discipline performed in order to qualify for greater blessing, but as a genuine reckoning with reality that the world owes us nothing and that the cross has already settled every legitimate account we might try to run. Entitlement in ministry takes specific forms, and they're real and they're seductive. Number one is the expectation of recognition. Another one will be the assumption of appreciation. I think, and also pastors, leaders can have this entitlement to fairness, the demand for promotion in proportion to effort. And the servant asked something different. The servant asked, who can I serve, rather than who should be serving me? And that question can only be asked freely and genuinely from a place where the need for what it is relinquishing and all has already been addressed at a deeper level. I think the second invitation Jesus has for us is to resolve to give more than you receive, to make the governing philosophy of your leadership rather than one of its occasional expressions. If you might remember Stephen Covey's thermostat illustration, he says a thermometer reads the temperature. It reflects whatever the environment around it is producing. A thermostat sets the temperature. It changes the environment rather than simply tracking it. If I could say anything about the five gifts, I would say this. They function as thermostats to influence, to invest, to develop, to encourage, to mentor, and multiply without keeping a ledger of what's been returned, to change the relational and spiritual temperature of their communities that they're placed in, rather than simply reflecting what those communities would produce without their experience.
Yeah, I mean, genuine humility, the kind that actually produces the servant posture that we've been describing, it's not what most people assume it is. It's not insecurity, wearing a spiritual costume. It's not the suppression of genuine conviction or the absence of real confidence. Meekness in the biblical sense is strength that's submitted. So it's capacity that's been genuinely consecrated to something larger than the person possessing it. The freedom that this kind of humility releases is substantial. The leader who's genuinely renounced the need to prove themselves is free to acknowledge what they do not know. The leader who has genuinely renounced the need to defend themselves is free to receive feedback without experiencing it as an existential threat. The leader who's genuinely renounced the need to promote themselves is free to celebrate others' contributions without calculating what those contributions cost them in comparative standing. The leader who has genuinely renounced the need to control is free to develop genuine authority, the kind that comes from trust rather than from positional enforcement. And then secure leaders create secure disciples. So the leader who's free from the performance pressure of self-promotion creates a community in which the people they lead can also develop freely. They can take risks, they can acknowledge failure, they can grow through difficulty, can become genuinely more capable rather than simply more compliant. And the servant identity of the leader is what creates the conditions for genuine formation in everyone around them. So as we try to bring all of this to a close on this episode, let's go back with me, return with me to the upper room for a moment. The creator of the universe kneels on a stone floor with a basin and a towel. The King of Kings, he takes the feet of fishermen and washes the road dust from between their toes. The one who holds all authority in heaven and on earth is the one who assumes the posture of the lowest servant in the household. And he says this, I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Look, friends, that's the model for every apostle, for every prophet, every evangelist, every pastor, every teacher. It's not a model to admire from a respectful distance, but a model to inhabit, to allow the Spirit to form in us as a genuine identity rather than an occasional gesture. Look, the five gifts are not five pathways to personal importance. They are five ways that Christ continues serving his church through the people he has called, he's equipped, and that he is still forming. They're the most powerful when the people, they're the most powerful not when the people carrying them are most impressive, but when those people are most genuinely available, they're most genuinely submitted, when they're most genuinely other-oriented and most genuinely reduced.
Charles, that's a powerful statement. The five gifts are not five, would you say, five pathways to personal importance. Here are some questions worth carrying, I think, into your prayer time this week. Some things that we'd love you to just consider in your prayer time. Where has entitlement quietly replaced servanthood in how you approach your gift? Are you expecting something from your leadership, your influence? Maybe where has your title or your position become more central to your identity than your genuine love for the people you're called to serve? How about this? Where has the recognition you're not receiving become more consuming than the service you could be giving? I think if we're honest as leaders, we've all struggled at different points with some of those questions. And if you'd like to take time, we'd love for you to sit with those and reflect a little bit this week. Of course, people admire gifted leaders, but they trust servant leaders. And those are not the same group, though they can be, when the gift has been genuinely submitted to the servant identity of the one who gave it. And that's our Savior, that's Christ. And I believe Charles, Jesus is still looking for leaders who are willing to decrease so that he might increase. Leaders who have been genuinely reduced by his grace into the kind of greatness that doesn't seek greatness, does not protect greatness, and doesn't need to be told it's great. Leaders whose influence grows precisely because they've stopped managing it. And what every servant gift functions with the heart of Christ, the church grows into maturity, unity, and the fullness of Christ itself. That's the mission. That's the measure. And that's the beauty of the five gifts, rightly understood and faithfully carried. Listen, if this conversation has surfaced something in you want to explore further, if you want support in developing a servant leadership culture in your local church, your team, or even your marketplace context, you can connect with us at charlesrusselltraining.com, charlesrussellministries.com, or coachingcardia.com. Again, if this episode has been life-giving to you, please like, follow, subscribe, share. If you don't like it, you're free. In fact, hit that thumb downs button twice, just to make sure we know how you feel about it. But anyway, we're glad to be with you today on the Five Gifts podcast. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Five Gifts podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.